from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Sunset Magazine is a venerable California institution. For more than 100 years, Sunset's mission has been to cultivate and celebrate life in California and the West. And no small part of that Western Chronicle has focused on food. Now Sunset has published a massive collection of recipes, more than 1,000 in all, that pays homage to the Western palate. From guacamole to date shakes, crab louie to citrus salads, the Sunset Cookbook tells you how to make just about any dish that's ever been associated with California and the West. In the next hour Forum, we'll talk with the editors of Sunset Magazine about cooking and California. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. What would you serve up for your all-time favorite California meal? Little grilled salmon, citrus and avocado salad? Sunset Magazine has just published a hefty collection of Californian and Western recipes, over 1,000 in all, that include both time-tested favorites and newer additions to California cuisine. Sprinkled throughout the book are little nuggets of food history, how oranges came to California, the story of the best apricot, how Castroville came to be the artichoke capital of the world. And the 800-page book also represents a continuation of the resurgence of the 110-year-old Sunset Magazine, which has seen a 62% increase recently in its readers aged 18 to 34, a fact that should also at least prompt a few phone calls from envious newspaper editors. Joining us now to talk about the Sunset Cookbook and all things Californian and cooking are Margot True. She's food editor for Sunset Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
And joining us as well is Katie Tamina. She's editor-in-chief of Sunset Magazine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk first about why put out this book now. I was surprised by the fact that this is your first cookbook in a long time, and yet food is so central, really, to the kind of ethos of Sunset Magazine.
Absolutely. Food is a core to what we're about. And it has been about 17 years since we produced a cookbook. And that's not because we haven't wanted to. We definitely have. But the book business for Sunset has been largely focused on the home and garden area. And I have wanted to do a cookbook for a very long time. And when Margot became our food editor in 2006, we started talking about the book that we would like to see. And this is really the culmination of those discussions.
And what went into figuring that out? I mean, this seems like a daunting task to sort of cull through. And you still wind up with over 1,000 recipes. So I can't imagine how many you started with. But did you have a kind of idea in mind that you could sort of sift out in terms of what you wanted to wind up with?
Yes, we were lucky in that we knew from the outset that we wanted to do a cookbook that was very much geared toward how people cook today. So very accessible, fresh recipes, not that many ingredients, fairly easy and quick to make. So given that, we started from the present and worked backward, which made it much easier. If we had started in 1898 mm-hmm. and then started trying to cook our way on up, it would have taken many, many, many more years. So we were lucky because we had that premise established.
Is there – what element of continuity is there? I mean, if you go all the way back to the beginnings of your magazine and the earlier days of this state, is there – do you see something that is – a thread that continues through from that early time all the way to the present, though?
Yes. A celebration of the ingredients that are indigenous to the West. You know, our first enchilada recipe was in 1922, and it is nothing more than good corn tortillas, homemade corn tortillas, actually, and red chili sauce that's nothing more than New Mexico red chilies, pulverized and little water added, made into a puree, much the same way people do now, and then poured over the tortillas with a little chopped white onion and cheese and stacked and melted, of course, so it gets all gooey.
What about the West is so important to all of this, Katie Tamini? I mean, speak some about the overall kind of mission, I guess, of Sunset Magazine.
Well, our mission really has not changed over the last 100 years. It's really about exposing people to the opportunities and advantages that come from living here. And the West is very different from the rest of the country. And so our mission is just to celebrate that difference and also to identify what's new, emerging. Because this is where the future happens. You know, we're the home of the social network, the locally grown tomato, the zero carbon footprint. We are covering the future, and we make it mainstream. We make the new and out there mainstream, and we've always done that. And in cooking, I think one thread that comes through all of our food over the decades is the sense of daring that we have. We're not afraid to try new things out here in a way that's very different from the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. California is also a state now in terms of what it represents, where there's no majority race, where there's a huge diversity of ethnicities, race, religion. How is that reflected in food? How is what you publish now quite different than what you would have published even 20, 30 years ago?
Well, you can see through the years the waves of immigrants that have come to California and how that has shaped Sunset food. I mean, in the 70s, we saw this incredible surge of Vietnamese-inspired recipes. And I'd say in the last decade, we've done a lot of Indian cooking, mm-hmm. a lot of Middle Eastern cooking. And that is very reflective of the immigrants coming here, the types of restaurants that open here, and what our readers are finding out there in restaurants and what they want to start making at home.
Katie Tammany is editor-in-chief of Sunset Magazine. She joins us along with Margot True, the food editor for Sunset Magazine, talking about their just-released Sunset Cookbook. The idea of the melting pot is sort of long celebrated in American culture and then sort of fell out of favor in the sense of not wanting people to sort of merge identities but also have an opportunity to preserve identities. I'm curious about that, how that applies to the kitchen. Is it both? I mean, do you both preserve identities but also literally kind of melt them together?
Yes, you can't avoid it because food is alive. It is like language. And you can't prevent language from evolving through time, and neither can you fix food in time. You can't fix traditions in time either. So, and I think especially in California, where we tend to have these very free and open attitudes and we're not quite so bound to tradition, we see food coming and starting to mingle in these really new and creative and very easygoing ways. You know, at this point, the cultures that have come into the West have been established for quite a while. So it's become sort of multi-generational the way we cook now, in the sense that we have this shared pantry. We can put kimchi on a burger. We can put chorizo on our pizza. We can put the smoked paprika in the mushroom soup, you know? And nobody really blinks. Everybody's very used to it now. It's really a wonderful expression of who we are and where we are.
And how is that reflected in the cookbook itself? Are there both recipes that are purely Indian or Korean and also ones that have kimchi on a burger?
Well, yes. I would say the majority of the recipes are like that. We always try at Sunset to give a little bit of a twist to something that is familiar. I mean, it's just a wonderful exercise in looking into that pantry and deciding what will enliven, say a bowl of chili, you know. What could we borrow from one of the cultures that is here and established here? I would say, 75% of the recipes in the book are that way, actually.
What have you done, Katie Tammany, to push Sunset Magazine, this venerable institution that is so much a part of California's history, into the present? I referenced in the introduction that you've seen this interesting boost. Mm-hmm. The statistic came from a recent New York Times article about your new cookbook. Mm-hmm. What are you trying to do to sort of join into the present, and how does food connect with that? Because we all know there's enormous interest right now in food, in nutrition, in the way in which that forms part of California life.
Right. I think what we've really been focused on is identifying, the trends that all ages really care about, and so many young people are adopting this spirit of ethos of do-it-yourself, spirit of do-it-yourself that's been a part of Sunset for obviously a long, long time. But the other thing that we're doing doing is having fun and not taking ourselves too seriously, trying out the new and slightly wacky. And, you know, one of the things that we did a few years ago was we have our own backyard chickens. We're raising hens in our backyard at sunset and learning how to raise them. We're raising bees for honey. We learned how to make our own wine. And we're just kind of plunging in and enjoying ourselves. And I think that that spirit is coming through in the magazine, and it's capturing how young people feel about doing things for themselves, that it is fun.
Walk us through some of the process, Margot True, about how you the do-it-yourself aspects, I guess, of creating this cookbook, because you have this interesting process of testing recipes and that it's a very hands-on creation.
Oh, very much so. It wouldn't get there without a lot of hands-on, that's for sure. Well, once we food staff create a recipe, or if it's coming from a chef or a cookbook writer, and we cook it until we think it's right and the recipe is written perfectly, then we give it to a team of what we call the retesters. And these are wonderful home cooks with no particular culinary training who come into Sunset. And some of these women have worked for Sunset for decades. And they come and they cook the recipe exactly as written. They're not allowed to fix it.
And set the location for this. I mean, do you have a series of test kitchens that are like sort of every Tom, Dick, and Harry's kitchen? Mm-hmm. I mean, what's going on there?
Well, we do have a big test kitchen that is meant to simulate a home kitchen. So it has four different stations, and we have gas grills and we have charcoal grills too, so that we can test recipes on both to make sure they work. We have gas ovens and stoves, and we also have electric. So once the retester gets this recipe, she cooks through it literally, not fixing anything. And it is rare that she won't catch something, really rare, because, you know, you always have to have a home cook test it. And these people are stand-ins for the home cook. And even if it does sail through perfectly the first time around, we always give it to a second person, a second retester to test, because she brings with her different life experiences. And our retesters also have a range of different skill levels and, you know, different cultural backgrounds. And they bring all that wealth of their own lives to testing the recipes, just as home cooks do.
So have your cooks changed over the years? I mean, just as we were talking about the way in which the population of California has changed, you bring in different people now to make sure that you're not just having, you know, people who all represent the same demographic?
Yes, we do. We have a group of women who have worked with us for a long time, but we do have people who have just been with us for a couple of years too. So they do bring with them different sorts of experiences and attitudes, and it's interesting to see the kinds of questions they ask versus, you know, some of the more old-time people who work at the magazine.
Margot True is the food editor of Sunset Magazine. The new book, again, is called The Sunset Cookbook. Margot True will be at the Ferry Building on November the 6th at 11:45. That's a Saturday, right? So that's the day of the farmer's market at the Ferry Building, I think. So perfect time to be there, 11:45 in the morning on Saturday, November the 6th. And then she'll also be at the Omnivore Bookstore, which is in Noe Valley in San Francisco on Cesar Chavez near Dolores. That's on November the 18th between 6 and 7 o'clock in the evening. And you're going to be cooking at least at the Ferry Building, right? Are you going to be demonstrating certain things?
Yes, right from the pages of this book, and using Ferry Plaza produce, of course. I mean, that's the whole premise of cooking there.
What are you going to cook?
You know, I haven't decided yet. I'm going to wait until inspiration hits. Well, I'm actually going to look through the cookbook and decide what people should be cooking now for Thanksgiving, you know, for the cold months ahead, and try to give them exactly what they're hungry for.
Well, let's talk a little bit about food. We probably haven't spent enough time yet talking about food itself. You begin the introduction to your book by describing sort of your ideal California meal. Why don't you repeat that? And then I'd like to hear yours as well, and sort of see then and open it up to our listeners about what they think of as being the ideal California meal.
Oh, well, thank you, because that gives me a chance to talk about my parents, who I adore. Well, my idea of a perfect meal is at my parents' house in Ojai. And they have this great old place that my grandparents actually built in the 50s, back when Ojai was just a little town among the orange trees, you know. And so it's on a you know, sizable little chunk of property. It has a stream running through it and eucalyptus trees. And if you sit in the backyard on the back patio, you can see the mountains all around you. And so we're sitting out there, and my mom's just made a big paella. She loves to make paella. So we're having paella, and we're having some good red wine from Barranca Winery, which is fairly new, but really nice wines. We're all sitting around. Nobody's dressed fancy, you know. Just that's another, I think, hallmark of how we all like to eat in the West. We don't get dressed up for it. We just, you know, we're just relaxed. We're comfortable. And there's a salad that my mom's made with oranges, because we have a lot of orange trees lining the driveway at home, and avocados from the market. There are avocados all over Ojai. And you know, we have this nice big salad with the paella, and then, you know, my sister and I probably would make a Meyer lemon tart for dessert, and we have that, and, you know, it's just kind of easy. It's all easy.
What would be on yours, Katie?
It sounded really good. I was just captured.
It's 10:20 in the morning.
I would start with padrone peppers, you know, fried, blistered with sea salt on it. That's just such a yummy, explosion of flavor at a certain time of year. And then, like Margot, I would have a salad with avocado for sure. And then I think, you know, my favorite main dish is grilled salmon with a really simple balsamic, soy, honey glaze. And dessert, I grew up in Sebastopol, so for me it would have to have
apples.
Something to do with apples or Santa Rosa plum. And there would be lots of wine. There would be really good bread. There would be really wonderful cheese and olive oil. I think that's another area where we are so incredibly lucky. We have all these artisan cheesemakers, and we're, you know, seeing this explosion of California oil. California olive oil booming right now, and so I would have a meal that really captured the classic, the grilled salmon, but then really explored some of these artisanal foods.
I imagine there might be a few people listening who would say, well, that sounds great, but, you know, I don't have an orange grove in my backyard. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a stream or a eucalyptus tree, or I don't have an apple orchard. You're describing something that sounds like way out there, that's apart from my everyday life in my apartment, or maybe beyond my checkbook. Mm-hmm. Talk about that some, because it's easy sometimes, I think, with food and wine in particular, to sort of be very high end. How have you made this book not high end?
Well, you know, we've made a point of having the ingredients be very accessible, and we don't include high ticket items for the most part in our recipes. We're always aware that our readers, you know, live within budgets like normal people do, and if we would give an expensive ingredient or an artisanal ingredient, we always give an alternative, and we make sure that the recipe is delicious using that alternative. You know, so for instance, there's an apricot crisp in the book that is a personal favorite of mine, because I love Blenheim apricots, the most wonderful apricot in the world that does not travel because it's so delicate. It bruises so easily.
And has been, or was at least, until sort of all the orchards got knocked down, grown here on the the peninsula.
Exactly. In the Valley of Heart's Delight, which is what Silicon Valley used to be called,
right,
when it was orchards. So the recipe says preferably Blenheim apricots, and we take the picture with the Blenheim apricot, but we also give instructions for how to deal with your average supermarket apricot to make it taste wonderful. You add a little more lemon juice, you add a little more spices, you cook it just a little longer, you know, and it's still wonderful. It's wonderful. You just have to treat it differently.
One of the things I noticed in the preface, I guess, of the book, though, was that you're not very compromising when it comes to cutting down on fat. I was trying to think of the nice way to say this, and I couldn't come up with it. But you recommend full-fat cheese, full-fat cream cheese, whole milk, full-fat sour cream. It's like that's one area where you can maybe compromise on your apricot, but not on – is that right?
Well, that reflects my personal feeling. I am not a fan of low-fat dairy. I am just not, except for Greek yogurt. I actually think low-fat Greek yogurt is just fine. Now, of course, I know that our readers are going to do what they need to do for their health, and I respect that choice. But I am representing our point of view, and I truly believe that dairy is most delicious when it is full fat. And I don't think it's bad for you if you eat it in moderation. Like the late, great Julia Child always used to say, just have a little bit. Just don't go whole hog. You know, you don't need to eat pounds of it.
Yeah, I think that gets to actually Sunset's overall take on healthy eating, which is it's all about balance. Mm-hmm. And it's also about being active. And that's something that, you know, Westerners really are, you know, apart from the rest of the country in that sense, too. We're a lot more on the move and active. And that means that we, you know, we can eat real cheese. And,
it's also... Part of what, when Margo was describing her ideal meal, part of what you could visualize as that was being described is the outdoors. And that's obviously also so central to what Sunset Magazine is about. Speak to that some, if you would, Katie Tammany, about the outdoors and the way it affects cooking. It sounds like lots of what's in the book has to do with grilling, with being outside, with cooking outside, eating outside. How does that fuse together?
Well, absolutely. The one of the key differences in the West is the beautiful landscape, the light that we enjoy, what we can grow here, how we can live outside. You know, so much of the year we can spend time outdoors because the temperatures are so mild. And I think that, that informs how we entertain, that informs our casual style of eating and being, you know, barefoot and picking stuff out of the garden and whipping it together right there. That really informs how we think about our kitchens. You know, we're enjoying going out to the farmer's market. We're growing our own produce in our backyard. It's all part of celebrating the beautiful landscape where we live.
In that sense, should we think of this book, the Sunset Cookbook, in tandem with, you know, How to Grow Herbs or whatever else may be on the Sunset list of publications, that this all fits together as part of a whole?
Absolutely. In fact, our most recent book before the Sunset Cookbook was the Western Garden Book of Edibles. We released that last spring, and it quickly got to the number one spot on the garden list. It's proven to be a real success with young people especially. I think that younger market we were talking about earlier, when it comes to gardening, they are really interested in growing their own produce. And that is part of the style of cooking that we're about.
And it's you note, I think, in your introduction, Margot True, that there are three chapters on vegetables within this book, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not just a tri-tip. You know, it's all about there's a big element of this that is healthy, that is outdoors, that is homegrown.
Oh, absolutely. We love our vegetables here. We love our produce. And there's no reason not to love it. It's the best in the country, I think. You know, it's we have a huge chapter on vegetarian main courses and salads, all kinds of salads, all sorts of creative, wonderful salads that put fruit into the salad and nuts and cheeses. And, you know, it's salad for dinner. I mean, we're the land of salad for dinner.
What do you say to people like me, like most people really, who say, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I've got family commitments. I've got work commitments. I don't get home until 6:30 or 7 o'clock. I need to be able to do something fast. I need to be able to do something that's decent, but it needs to be fast. That speed is really the bottom line.
I would say, you know, with the best ingredients, the right way often to cook them is fast, fresh. We even have a department in the magazine we call Fast and Fresh because we're really focused on the fact that real people have jobs and families and limited time, and they're looking for things they can do in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the other elements that sets the staff apart is their ability to come up with recipes that literally from when you walk into the kitchen to when the dish is done, it's 30 minutes.
And I think there is, even within the book, there's sort of a fast index to recipes that you can done quickly. We have to take a break. When we come back, we'll open up our phone lines. What's your ideal California meal? How do you go about incorporating food into your life in a way that makes sense and that's perhaps fast? Join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Back with more in just a moment. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the new Sunset Cookbook, the first cookbook that Sunset Magazine has published in 17 years. In it are over 1,000 new recipes, all focused on the cuisine, not only of California, but of the West in general. Joining us are Margot True, the food editor for Sunset Magazine, and Katie Tammany, editor-in-chief of Sunset Magazine. We welcome your participation, too. If you have a question for either of our Sunset Magazine editors, or if you'd like to describe your own ideal California meal and why that is so representative and important to you, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your comment online. Number of emails coming in. Paul writes, before my dad passed away earlier this year, he had asked me to track down a Sunset Magazine recipe he'd made when I was about 5, over 50 years ago, which was similar to a chicken stew cooked in a coconut shell. Someone at the magazine was able to find the recipe, originally published in 1952, and mail it to him in time for the party at which he wanted to serve it. I can't afford to subscribe to the magazine now, but I sure hope this valuable resource is around for another 100 years. Lovely email. You must like getting that kind of
wonderful
thing. I'm going to give this to you to keep.
Thank you. Well, and actually, we have a woman that Margo and I work with, Stephanie Dean, and she tracks down stories like this, and you almost cry sometimes when you hear about people's memories of food.
Because there's such an association between food and family and memory and childhood and all those things. So if you're listening and you have that favorite recipe from 1950 whatever, you can call Sunset Magazine. How do you do that?
You can call the front desk and you know, you'll be routed to our reader services department, and they'll try to help you out. You can also go online to sunset.com, and we have a lot of our recipes there as well.
Mm-hmm. And we like to keep our favorite reader recipes. Sometimes we even put them up on our walls to remind us of
chicken stew in a coconut shell.
Sounds adventurous.
Sounds really so great. Adventurous. Here's an important question that Katrina writes in. Regarding your comment about cooking salmon as a California meal, that would actually be the last item I would choose, given the dramatic decline of the salmon runs and the environmental destruction of salmon farmed in other parts of the country. It's a great example of what once was a spectacularly abundant California food and highlights how we need to get current with what we're putting on our table and managing our food. Important point.
Well, she does make an important point. And I think, you know, we very much believe in using only sustainable seafood in our cooking. And we only write about and print salmon recipes when it is salmon season. We believe that seafood does have a season and that...
And you also, and you have in the book, there are these sort of historical notes throughout the book, the history of certain foods and how oranges came to California, that kind of thing. But you also have, you take up these sorts of questions about salmon sustainability in particular are dealt with in the book.
Yes, absolutely. And we recommend two particular types of salmon. You know, we're trying to divert all this attention on the king salmon because that poor fish is being over harvested. People should turn to the coho and some of the other species that are around and get to know the different species of salmon that are available. And also to realize that frozen salmon is just fine. And it's often coming from Alaska, which has the most sustainable salmon fishery that exists.
So you have to pay attention to when you buy it and where you buy it and what kind. I mean, and that's part of what you want to inform with all of your publications?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, we very much believe in... that cycle of food, you know, enjoying it, but also preserving the land that we all love.
Let's hear some of our callers. Kevin joins us first, listening in from Knoxville, Tennessee this morning. Kevin, go ahead.
Hi there. I lived in California for 2 years in Elk Grove, just below Sacramento. And when I moved there in the fall, there was a very decrepit farm stand about half a mile from me. And that spring, suddenly it was occupied, and it was a Vietnamese family selling the most delectable strawberries, the size of my thumbnail that I've ever had. and I'm actually choking up remembering those. They were just awesomely good. Yeah. And the first time I bought them, I stopped by on my way home from work and bought a pint and was driving home and reached over and ate one and ate another one and made a U-turn and went back because one pint simply wasn't going to be enough.
Kevin, thanks. Great story. But also points Katie Tammany to this other point we were talking about earlier about the evolution of California and that those Central Valley farmers now are often new Americans, people coming to this country and reviving certain things that were traditions from before.
They are. And they're also growing things that are new to many of us here, vegetables and herbs that are new that we haven't seen before. And those are amazing discoveries.
They are. And the way that they're actually making their way into the mainstream, Chinese long beans, for instance, you know, you do see them at farmers markets fairly frequently now. But now they're at Safeway. Yeah. You know, the big supermarkets are starting to pay attention to the way these vegetables are coming into our collective consciousness. And that's often through farmers markets, where, you know, some of the Vietnamese farmers can come sell what they're growing and just make life richer for all of us.
Maybe you should include a few of those variations when you cook at the Ferry Building on November the 6th.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Margot True is the food editor for Sunset Magazine. She will be at the Ferry Building at 11:45 on Saturday, November the 6th. She'll also be at the Omnivore Bookstore in Noe Valley in San Francisco on November the 18th. Let's hear next from John in Sonoma. John, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yeah, my name is John. I'm a restaurant owner called Local in Sonoma, and I celebrate my Hungarian and German heritage by introducing that to the local community. And recently, I thought about how most of the Latino kitchens in California, and for that matter, United States, also have such great food and great recipes that we're bringing their culture into my concept. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing now is, for example, tonight we have Hungarian fish tacos, which you
wow.
wouldn't think that would work, but the community is embracing it. And it really does celebrate the local nature of how the restaurants work. And I thought it was really on point with the way that you're bringing in local ingredients. Well, I'm bringing in the local workforce to celebrate whatever diversity they have and whatever great recipes they can bring into my kitchen. I have no ego about it, and everyone seems to love it.
John, that's great. Again, that's your restaurant in Sonoma again is what?
It's called Local. That's L-O-K-A-L. It translates as pub in German. And it's Hungarian and German food, and we got fish tacos on Fridays. What can I say?
Great, John.
That's awesome.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
One of the things that you were saying is significant about the book is that it's a book for every kind of cook. I was asking before about people like me who maybe aren't that adept or who are focused on what can I do quickly. But you've got a range, probably including somewhere, I suspect, a Hungarian fish taco, right?
I mean, I wish we did. We have to get that in the next edition.
But there's something for everyone there in terms of degree of difficulty. I mean, you can sort
yes.
of range across the board within the book.
Absolutely, because, you know, there are a lot of people out there who just love to cook, and they love nothing better than sinking their hands into, you know, some good bread dough on a weekend and having a real project, having an adventure. The book is primarily composed of recipes that are very straightforward, accessible, easy, and you know, don't pose any sort of particular challenge for a weeknight cook. But then we have recipes like making your own sourdough using a natural starter that we tell you how to make. And we actually have two recipes in the book for how to roast a whole animal, which I'm really excited about.
Let's go to Bonnie next in San Francisco with her favorite California meal. Bonnie, go ahead.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I've never called in, and I'm a biggest fan of NPR ever.
Happy to have you.
Thank you to Sunset Magazine, because I also read it religiously. And I am one of the people that is a gardener. I garden at White Crane Community Garden in San Francisco.
Oh, great.
And I just wanted to say that one of your meals has to be basically kind of similar to mine. I would say artisan cheeses.
Yeah.
And especially I have a salad that's arugula, grilled peaches, goat cheese, and it has to be from Cowgirl Creamery from the Ferry Building, fresh, because that has to be just, I'm so grateful for the food that we have, and the salads, you're right, are exceptional and unbelievable, from the fruit to the nuts and berries that we have available. Amazing.
Bonnie,
sounds
thanks.
Like a good salad. And, you know, I think you, your ingredient list points to the fact of we're very adventurous when it comes to what ingredients we put in our salad mm-hmm. and how we're willing to mix things that might be surprising.
Bonnie mentioned that she gardens at a community garden, which is something that you see frequently in more urban environments like San Francisco. But it also gets at a question that we touched on a little bit in the first part of our program, but I'd like to return to, which is the availability of fresh produce, particularly in urban areas, particularly mm-hmm. in low-income areas. It's always been a huge problem having access to good food if you live in a less well-to-do area. I'm curious if Sunset Magazine is trying to do anything about that particular issue. There was a news story earlier this week about how clinics now are trying to work with nutritionists and food because it's so central to health. Is that something you ought to take on, Katie Tammany?
I think so. I think, you know, a few years ago, we actually took on the idea of planning a school garden with a lower...
The Alice Waters sort of idea.
Yeah, and we were working with a school actually in East Palo Alto to help families and kids understand how growing their own produce could be fun, could be, you know, a healthy idea. And we wrote about it in the magazine, and it's something that we want to come at in lots of different ways. I think that one of the things that we're seeing among young people especially is this interest in community gardens, interest in school gardens.
I mean, Sunset Magazine's on Willow Road and Middlefield in Menlo Park. You're really only a stone's throw from East Menlo Park
right.
in an area that
right.
is considerably less well-to-do than
exactly.
most of what we
yes.
imagine Menlo Park
yes.
to be. It just seems like there might be an interesting both challenge and opportunity there for
yeah,
you
totally
as an
agree.
Institution.
Yes, yes.
To Alex in Inverness next. Alex, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm a vegetarian, and, well, my favorite meal would be I grow potatoes and lettuce and tomatoes and onions all in our garden in Inverness. And basically I make my own fries, deep fry them, use the lettuce, tomatoes, all the other stuff to put in my veggie burger, and basically the best meal on the planet. I make the best fries ever. And they're great because they come from my garden, and it's cheap and it's healthy, and it doesn't get much better than that.
Wow, is that an invitation? That sounds really good.
Yeah, come on out.
Alex, thank you. Alex also used the deep fried word, Margot Drew. I'm curious about what you think of that.
I love deep frying. I honestly do, because I think that there's a way to deep fry and there's a way not to deep fry.
Hmm.
If you deep fry at the right temperature, your food will not be greasy. There's this misperception, I think, that deep fried food is just going to be intrinsically bad for you and full of fat and grease and so forth. And it's really not. And if it's done correctly, and it's not that hard to do correctly.
Our producer, Kevin Guillory, just said over my headset, hot and fast.
She is absolutely right.
Yeah, all right.
There is a killer.
He actually.
Oh, okay. There's a great recipe in the book for avocado fries, actually, that to me represents so much of what this cookbook is about, because it, you know, takes one of our favorite items of produce, the avocado, cut into wedges. You coat it in panko, Japanese breadcrumbs, and then you deep fry it at, you know, 350, 360 for 30 seconds.
Is part of what you want to do challenge maybe some of our conventional notions about things, whether it's deep frying or full fat cream cheese or whatever, that we can be a little too obsessive about what we think is healthy and may not actually need to be that extreme?
Absolutely. You know, food is pleasure, and food is joy, and food is family, and food is culture, and food is the world that we live in. It's not all about these little numbers, you know. It's much more about celebrating your life.
I mean, I'm a guy who, you know, is always looking at how many calories are in a package when I pick something up at the store, and I'm fairly obsessive about exercise. Do you think that we've gone overboard with that, Katie Tammany?
I think in some ways we have, and I think what Margot just said about that food is more than calories, and it's more than you know, keeping track of everything you eat in a scientific way. I think it's really pleasure and joy. I mean, we said earlier about people's memories attached to food, and their feelings of family are often come through food, and I think that's something to be celebrated as well, and also, I do believe, as Margot does, that the healthiest diet is one where it's just all about balance, and that includes French fries,
mm-hmm.
and
Absolutely.
It also includes lots of salad, lots of vegetables. much more than probably a lot of people eat.
And, mm-hmm. and in a way, I think it's true. If you're so obsessed about numbers, then you don't have the opportunity for that wonderful story that we heard from the listener who wanted that 1952 recipe.
Exactly.
You don't have the opportunity for the memories that you were describing, Margot, about your own family, because those things go beyond what those numbers are. Here's another question from about salmon from Doug, who says, I love the show and the topic, but I do take issue with the guests about their thoughts on the sustainability of salmon. Although there is a season for salmon and Alaska does have a somewhat thriving fishery, farm salmon is not a viable option since salmon are carnivorous species and thus require the destruction of other fish to feed the salmon. Better option would be to focus on herbivorous, if I'm saying that correctly, species, tilapia, so forth and so on.
True. Well, the Alaska salmon that I was speaking of are wild.
Right.
Alaska salmon.
Right. Not farm salmon.
They're not
but,
farmed.
But the point about tilapia is a good one. And actually, we just have a weeknight challenge going out to our readers in the next issue, asking them for their best recipes using tilapia. So we, you know, bring it on.
That's right.
If we want ideas with tilapia.
If you give us a good recipe for tilapia, we will be so grateful.
Here's someone else who wants to know about mackerel and Arctic char, because those are two sustainable fishes as well. So
that's
more
right.
room to go in that
yeah.
direction.
Yeah.
Bart writes in, a vegetarian concern. I'm a new subscriber to Sunset, but I've been a vegetarian for 40 years. So far, I've only received one issue, and I just don't want you to forget that a lot of us in this great state are meatless.
We know. Actually, that's one of the big trends that we have been looking at and covering, and we're doing a lot more recipes that are meatless than we have in the past, but it's a good reminder.
Harold in Campbell joins us next. Harold, go ahead.
Good morning, Dave. I have a couple of points. So I'll try to be quick. First, the editor from Sunset, who I want to compliment on the magazine, I've subscribed to it for 20 years. I look forward to it every month. Everybody being so busy, she said, you know, just 30 minutes. You know, 30 minutes is still kind of a long time. What I do, I go to the farmer's market on Sunday, and I buy all my produce, and I pre-wash it, and I'll barbecue some chicken. Just when you've got it all prepped, you come home, and you put it together in 5-10 minutes, you're going to eat a lot healthier.
That's absolutely right.
Harold, thanks.
That's a really good strategy, actually, is prepping for a busy week by doing a lot of pre-grilling, pre-washing.
That's right. And, you know, sprinkled throughout the book, we do give you tips for how to make a dinner in a lot less than 30 minutes. We have little compilations here and there of that kind of information. And also, the thing about our recipes that I really love is that when the time indicator is 30 minutes, we mean 30 minutes from the time all the raw ingredients are sitting in front of you uncut. That includes the prep time. You know, so we're a little bit different in that regard. We mean it when we say 30 minutes.
866-733-6786 is our number. If you'd like to join our conversation, 866-733-6786, or email us at forum@kqed.org. Jenny in San Jose, you're on. Go ahead, Jenny.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm calling from San Jose, California. I just wanted to tell you that my husband and I are of an interracial marriage. He is Mexican and I'm Chinese. And we're both immigrants, so we're accustomed to the more traditional Mexican and Chinese dishes that we eat at home. And we're very fortunate to be living in the Bay Area because I'm able to cook, and he's able to cook the more traditional dishes for our children to enjoy. And we've lived in other areas of the country where we don't have access to fruits such as bitter melon. I'm just very thankful that we do that. Here at the local market.
Jenny, thanks. Your cell line is breaking up a bit, so I'm going to have to let you go. But thanks for adding that in. And another twist, really, on what we're talking about, Katie Tammany, the idea of maintaining traditions, Chinese, Latino, in this case, blending them,
yes,
literally.
Yes.
And this is an area where that's more possible to do.
It is. I mean, that's what a great California story is, a family that blends their Chinese food traditions, Mexican food traditions together. And what she said about accessibility to ingredients here is really true, that you can keep those authentic traditions alive here in a way that it might not be as possible in other parts of the country.
Susan writes in, thanks for this program. I love Sunset Cookbooks and won a blue ribbon for garlic jelly and a second place ribbon for lime mint jelly at the San Mateo County Fair. Well, there you go.
Well, congratulations.
Both recipes from the Sunset Home Canning Cookbook, which is now out of print. Mm. Sunset recipes are timeless. Any plans to reissue the canning cookbook? People are interested in canning these days, says Susan.
I think people are very interested in canning. And we actually did a big story a couple years ago on preserves. And at an event we did recently in San Luis Obispo, one of our other food editors, Elaine Johnson, did a preserves demonstration. So she's absolutely right. Interest is high.
It's very high. And we do have a whole chapter in this book about preserves and canning that draws on a lot of those older recipes that she's right. The caller's right. They are timeless.
She mentioned garlic. I think it was garlic jelly. I've already set the email aside. I can't recall. But I did want you to squeeze in a little bit of their fun nuggets within the book, how Gilroy came to be the garlic capital, for example. And my favorite was actually Castroville and artichokes, because I never knew who was once the artichoke queen.
Oh, yes. Marilyn Monroe. Very briefly.
Marv in San Carlos joins us next. Marv, go ahead. Marv, sorry, we're not able to take your call. We're not able to cure you, but call back if you would. There's still a couple of minutes. We can get in your calls if you want to call back. And there's still time for you to join us. A couple minutes left if you want to join us at 866-733-6786. Keith writes in, I'm one of the many people who moved to California long ago, and a lot of us have looked to Sunset Magazine to learn more about California life and food. Nothing is more distinct to me about California cuisine than meal salads, grilled chicken, shrimp, salmon over a large plate of greens and vegetables. It's always something foreign to friends and family who come from the Northeast.
Mm. So true. We've done many stories about dinner salads, actually, and there are a whole lot of them in the cookbook. I want the reader to know that.
And there's also a lot in the cookbook about wine, which we haven't really talked much about yet. How come? I mean, I think I know the answer, but what are you doing there, and why is that important to make sure that's part of the whole culinary experience?
Well, yeah, I'd say wine is a food to us. I mean, wine is part of our everyday life out here, again, in a way that it's not for the rest of the country.
Mm. And we live so close to these great wine-growing regions and in them. You know, so it makes sense to integrate that onto the table. And in the book, there's a lot of wine pairing advice, and then there's an entire wine chapter at the end that takes, you know, perhaps people who are a little bit new to wine through the basic questions that they wish they could ask, but maybe are a little timid about asking. And
what kind of things do you take up that are sort of basic?
Basic. Is there a particular technique to tasting wine, you know, for example, and taking you through the basic, very easy ways to fully appreciate the aroma of a wine and how to taste it and notice the full effect of it in your mouth as you swallow and wait to see how long it lasts and what are legs? You hear people talking about the legs of a wine, you know, and all of these things are explained in a very straightforward, easygoing way by our wine editor, Sarah Schneider.
Let's get in a couple more calls. Heather in Palo Alto wants to offer a recipe, I think, maybe. Heather, go ahead.
Hi there. I wanted to tell you, by the way, I love Sunset Magazine. It's one of my favorite things to give as a gift.
Oh, thank you.
Two of my favorite California foods are spinach, which takes no time to repair in a frying pan, a little bit of water, and then dressed with balsamic vinegar. The other thing I love is candied orange rinds, which takes many, many hours to prepare, but it's a wonderful gift to give for Christmas. And everybody we've given to it loves it and wants the recipe. I encourage people to look up that old-time recipe and enjoy it.
And you'll be pleased to know that there is a recipe for candied orange rind in the cookbook.
Heather, thanks. I assume, I haven't looked at that part of the book yet, but a lot of dessert recipes, too. We haven't really talked much about that.
Oh, yes, definitely. And this is where our archives provided this treasure trove of recipes. Some of the recipes that we went back and looked at and brought into the cookbook from decades past needed some tweaking to sort of become current with our tastes today. The baking recipes were virtually untouched. They're amazing. There's one recipe in the book for freeze ahead sweet dough, and it's the most versatile thing. You can make it and just freeze the dough, or you can make it and make the rolls and or the pastries and freeze those, or you can make the pastries and let them rise overnight in your refrigerator and bake them off in the morning. And there's one for glazed orange rolls that is the pillowiest, most tender, delicious sweet rolls with this little veneer of crackly glaze shot through with orange zest that just makes you want to eat six of them.
This is really unfair to be doing at 10:55 in the morning. Let's squeeze in one more call. Eric in San Pablo. Go ahead briefly, if you would, please.
Hi, thanks very much. I'd be interested in if you could recommend sources. I'm vegetarian, recently turned vegetarian through wanting to diet and lose weight, which I lost about 100 pounds over a year.
Wow, good for you. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. But I'm curious as to, other than beans and what other source, and maybe tofu, sources of protein, and if you need to have beans with rice or just beans for the protein. And I've heard dark vegetables, dark green vegetables, if you can recommend those just for wanting to enhance protein and iron sources for nutrition.
Eric, thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, what they say about brightly colored foods is true. They have more antioxidants in them. If you go for butternut squash and kale and the cruciferous vegetables have a lot of, you know, great nutrients in them, too. And as far as a complete protein, you know, one culture you might consider looking at is India, because this is a nation of vegetarians. You know, 80% of the country is vegetarian. And there are these wonderful lentil dishes, all kinds of dals, and, you know, just they're wizards with lentils. And if you have lentils and yogurt and a grain together, that does form an extremely healthy and balanced meal. And, you know, I'd recommend that you kind of look a little toward the east for inspiration.
And yet another way of sort of taking something new and beginning to create new memories, which is something we've talked about throughout the hour.
Yeah.
Margot True is the food editor for Sunset Magazine. The new book, again, is called The Sunset Cookbook. Margot will be at the Ferry Building in San Francisco doing a little cooking demonstration on Saturday, November the 6th, I think it was.
Yes.
At 11:45 in the morning. She'll also be at the Omnivore Bookstore on November the 18th. That's in the Noe Valley area of San Francisco. Margot, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Katie Tammany joins us, too. She's editor-in-chief of Sunset Magazine. Katie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Our editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer is Danny Bringer, and the executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.